You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. The Postal Service has been a part of our critical infrastructure in this country for many, many years and decades. It helps us communicate with each other, sending messages and materials across really long distances. It also facilitates our participation in things like work and school and politics, and it allows us to do things like keeping in touch with family members and loved ones across the nation and, of course, around the world. But in the digital age, there are a lot of people who have questioned the significance of the Postal Service, and some of its competitors have moved some of us to say, well, why shouldn't we make this a private sector enterprise? There are some people who have even suggested that the post office, which is part of the U.S. Constitution, which means it's been with us since the very beginning of the nation, that maybe it should be allowed to fade away, to absolutely stop operating. Of course, there are other people who disagree, saying that the post office should go further and do more, that if we unburdened it of the things that some of its private sector competitors don't face, it could actually be a sterling service in our government. There are people who suggest it should be a space for voting, for conducting financial transactions, for offering loans to people who otherwise might not have the credit to get them. Maybe it could even be used for selling inexpensive goods and services. The idea is that if we applied our imaginations to the idea of the Postal Service, we could come up with all kinds of things that it might do and might do really well. President Biden signed a law yesterday that will ensure that the post office stays alive, at least. And while this was a pretty modest move, it could be the start to some new thinking around this very old American institution. And that's where we continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. We want to talk about what the Postal Service could be. What could we rely on it for? What could it do to make money? Not that that's the purpose of government, but there's nothing wrong with the idea that a government service could make enough money to pay for itself, for instance, or to help offset costs of other government services. To talk about what we might imagine for the Postal Service, we've got two really great thinkers on the subject. Ian Lee is an associate professor at the Sprott School of Business at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. Ian, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, and thank you, Stephen.
Also with us is Monique Morrissey. She is an economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Monique, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
Before we talk about the significance of what President Biden did yesterday and what it might mean to the future of the Postal Service, I want to spend a little time listening to what the president said as he signed this law.
Today, we enshrine in law our recognition that the Postal Service is fundamental to our economy, to our democracy, to our health, and the very sense of who we are as a nation. And this bill recognizes the Postal Service as a public service, and we're ensuring that it can continue to serve all Americans for generations to come.
For all generations to come. I think that was certainly the idea that the founders had when they included the Postal Service in the Constitution. Of course, we're in a really different space in 2022. So, Monique, I'm going to start with you. What's the significance of this reform law, which includes allowing retirees to acquire Medicare, which is a really key financial shift for the Postal Service, and some other moves that really shore up its financial stability for the future? Why should we be paying attention to what the president did?
Well, I think that The main impact of this bill is that it's removing a major burden on the Postal Service, and that privatizers and other critics of the Postal Service have used since 2006 to make it seem as if the Postal Service is inefficient, money losing. And really, it's because it bore these burdens that Senator Peters earlier was talking about and that were canceled with yesterday with this legislation. That made it look like if the Postal Service was in the red, was not efficient, when in fact it's a very efficient operation. And the only problem it faces, this burden of pre-funding retiree healthcare that, as Senator Peters mentioned, no other company, no other government agency is required to do. And similarly, paying into Medicare without getting anything out of Medicare, which is also unique. So it's really removing some burdens and freeing it up to show how efficient it is and what other things it can be doing that I know we'll talk about later.
Yeah. Why does the Postal Service matter as much as it does? I try to do a good job in our open of talking about the things that I think bring value to this part of government, but spend some time talking about, I guess, why we have it and why we shouldn't just kind of bat it away and think, well, that was a thing that was really great when the country was founded, but technology and efficiency have overtaken the usefulness of this. Monique, why do we want to keep the Postal Service?
Well, that's a good question. So there's always sort of a debate about the public service and the role of government, the proper role of government. And most people, most Americans would agree that, for example, you know, Apple and other companies do a great job of, you know, with smartphones or with computers, that we wouldn't want government making smartphones. We'd have something like you have, you know, back in the days in Eastern Germany or in the Soviet Union. We don't want that. On the other hand, most Americans also agree that they show it by where they choose to send their children to school, that, you know, for-profit education is not really a good thing. I mean, we have some for-profit colleges and they've been shown to be a disaster. So the question is, what distinguishes things, or, you know, that we think the government does better, and what distinguishes things that the private sector does better? And there are a few that apply to the Postal Service here, one of which is that when a market is truly competitive, then sometimes the private sector innovates more. So, you know, in smartphones or something like that, it is competitive. I mean, there's some dominant players. But when it comes to basic utilities, networks, then it's never going to be competitive. We're never going to have competitive delivery service. There's always going to be an advantage to the big player who delivers, you know, every day. And the other things that the Postal Service has, so basically, even countries that have privatized or semi-privatized their postal services have heavily regulated them because they understand that it's not a competitive market. So it's not competitive. It relies on trust. These are people coming to your door every day. You know, I think that trust could actually be used to expand services. There are many other things that we trust government with, we trust public schools with. And so that's, trust is a big factor of it. And another major, major thing is equality, and the fact that also this is fundamental to our democracy. So, you know, most, you know, for sure we saw this in the election. Increasingly, people are voting by mail, so it's important, you know, during election days. But even beyond that, we view information, public radio is another one, that shouldn't, some information sharing, some things shouldn't be left to people's ability to pay. And this, you know, also the senator mentioned this, and president mentioned this too, is that rural areas in particular, you know, if this was left to the private sector, what we would see would be one dominant or a couple of dominant players providing good services to certain wealthy and dense areas. And in other areas, people would either get no services at all, or we'd be paying very much for those services. And rural areas, you know, the Postal Service is actually incredibly popular around the United States, and it's popular in red states, it's popular in blue states, urban, rural. We have post offices and postal delivery in poor areas, in rich areas, in rural areas, in urban areas. This would not happen. The services would not at all be equal, and the pricing would not at all be equal if it was left to the private sector, or if the private sector could encroach, you know, could sort of cherry pick, markets. And so this is one of the reasons, you know, we decided early on, and at the time it was, you know, one of the things that, that for example, motivated George Washington was the idea that people needed newspapers. So newspapers were heavily subsidized, you know, now most people get their news electronically, mm-hmm. but people now depend a lot on the Postal Service for medicine, for voting, for other really critical services, and still for information. So, you know, the need for the Postal Service has not declined, it's actually increased. And I think we'll talk about this later. I think one key area that the Postal Service used to be involved in, is no longer involved in, but I think we should bring back, is expanded financial services, just to allow ordinary Americans to be able to do basic record keeping transactions without paying through the nose for them. We're increasingly poor Americans, low-income Americans in places, rural Americans in places where banks are underserved, are having to pay just to pay their bills, just to, you know, cash their paychecks. And we think that that should be a Postal Service task also.
Hmm. So Ian, let's talk some of the basics. I know that, of course, you are in Canada, which has its own post office, but talk about how critical the U.S. post office is. I know that that's an area of research for you as well. And then do some comparing, I guess. What's the difference between postal service here and postal service in Canada?
I spent 4 years doing my PhD on the post office, and I chose it because nobody, if you can believe it, had ever written an academic thesis in Canada on the postal system, which I thought was bizarre because, of course, it's the central communication system if you go back far enough. And so because I wanted to find out the origins of the post office, the Canadian post office, I had to go to the origins of the American post office because it predates and heavily influenced the formation of the Canadian post office. And in that process, I came across this incredible quote by George Washington, your first president, about the U.S. postal system, the founding of it. And he said, "We are going to bind the nation to us with a chain that will never be broken." Nothing diabolical about that. He understood the unbelievable strategic existential importance in the day when there was no cell phones, no internet, no NPR, no CBC, no nothing. It was everything. It was the telegraph, the telephone, the TV, the radio, everything, all newspaper, all rolled into one. It was the way that you could communicate in a vast country, which the U.S. was, the Canada was, to vast geographies. And I'm going to nuance this, because for the next 150 or 200 years, the postal system was absolutely critically, existentially important to commerce, to politics, to everything. In both countries. And what's happened, and I'll bring this up to date very quickly, I think that the U.S. Postal Service and the problems facing the two countries are almost identical. If you look at the declines in letter mail or first-class mail or whatever you want to call it, they're declining precipitously in both countries. And I can state it in one word, young people, or two words. Every year with my students, I say, "What do you think of the post office?" And they giggle and they laugh. That does not mean that there's no important role for the post office. You go into rural Canada or rural U.S., and I've been many, many times to the U.S., the post office has an incredibly different meaning and importance to people in small towns and rural parts. But in the urban environment, it's becoming almost irrelevant. And so the challenge, and I do believe there's a future for the U.S. Postal Service, I believe there's a future for Canada Post, but not as it's presently constructed, that it only essentially delivers letter mail 6 days a week to 16 million addresses in Canada, 160 million addresses in the United States. They're going to have to reinvent themselves. I agree with Monique. You know, they're going to, you know, hunting licenses, fishing licenses, maybe places to vote. They're going to have to be re-engineered. And I've said this before, the commission that was investigating the future of Canada Post, they can become the central agency in all these small towns and villages across the country, and in both countries, to deliver the totality and gamut of government services. I'm just very quickly before I run out of time on this. Mm-hmm. I do disagree with Monique on the claim for postal banking. I testified against it. I believe I was evidence-based. I had the data from the government of Canada, from the regulatory body that says 99% of Canadians have a bank account. That the claim of underbanked Canadians isn't supported empirically. I looked up the FDIC data yesterday, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, Washington. 96.
Oh, I think we might have lost Ian Lee there. We lost the connection with him. We will get that connection back started. But meantime, let's get going on the phones and on social media talking about the post office. What do you think of the post office these days? How much do you rely on actual snail mail, as we call it? Do you appreciate the services that it provides? Would you be sad if all of that went away? And if you still value the post office and postal service, what would you do to make it more vital? What things do you think we could reimagine for the post office? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll try to work you back into the conversation that way. Before we get to listeners in either form, Monique, I want to talk just briefly about how important you think this move is to free up the post office and from its financial burdens, and what difference that will make immediately for people. I think that's one of the critical things you always ask is, okay, well, we're fixing this. Will people notice? Will there be something that says to them, hey, this is better than it was before?
Well, it is a real opportunity to try new things. And unfortunately, right now, there's a big fight going on about one of those opportunities, which is the Postal Service fleet is about 30 years old, if you can imagine. And it's about a third of the federal vehicle fleet. And President Biden has said that we need to be moving very rapidly towards electric vehicles for rather obvious reasons. Gas prices are going up. Electric vehicles are the cars of the future. The postmaster has made a very strange deal with a defense contractor in Wisconsin that it did before it actually did the impact statement. So before it actually analyzed whether or not this was smart, it made a deal to buy a bunch of vehicles from this company, Oshkosh Defense, that's moving to a non-union plant in South Carolina to make mostly gas-powered vehicles and incredibly inefficient gas-powered vehicles that when they're running, the air conditioning will basically run at the same, be the same as the vehicles that are there now. So about 8 miles per gallon. And in this analysis that it did, which was very flawed, it used a lot of, false assumptions like that gas was going to be in the low $2, for decades into the future and that kind of thing. So this is a real, this is something where the USPS should be taking the money it just saved because of the Reform Act and putting it towards an investment. Electric vehicles cost a little bit more upfront, but they save money in the long run. So if you do an analysis fairly with realistic gas prices and realistic mileage and costs, you would find that they save money. And that's something where it's better to do the investment upfront. So that is a big deal one. The other thing that's happening right now is the Postal Service has engaged in a pilot program of making tiny little steps towards expanding its financial services in the form of check cashing. But it needs to do better on that because it, so far it's in 4 post offices. The what it's charging for this service is too high. The limits on the checks that it will cash are too low. So the unions and other people and advocates are really pushing against that, trying to expand that and make that better because that is a very useful service. So I think those are 2 areas, but there are also many, many other things that the Postal Service could be doing, including, for example, as long as it's expanding its electric fleet, which it will be doing even under the terms of the agreement that the Postmaster General just signed, it could also be providing recharging at its 30,000 post offices around the country. So the post offices are really a huge value to the Americans because there's more of them than anything. There are more post offices than McDonald's or Subways or anything around the country, more than Walmart. So if they electrify, that will really jumpstart the shift to electric vehicles that the country needs to be doing.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the Postal Service, its current state, and its future. We've got Ian Lee back with us from Carleton University in Ottawa, Ontario. Monique Morrissey will continue with us as well, and we will get to you, on social media and on the phones. Remember, 313-577-1019 is the number. Give us a call. Tell us what you think about the post office, how often you use it, whether you think it still has a vital purpose here in our country, or whether you think there are other things that could replace it. If you like the Postal Service, call and tell us what you think it should be doing or could be doing to compete better with the other private services. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking about the Postal Service, which got a pretty big boost from President Biden yesterday when he signed legislation that will unburden the Postal Service of some pretty significant financial obligations, make it a little more nimble, maybe make it a little more competitive. The question is, what should the post office be doing to make itself more competitive, more relevant in a world where technology has taken over so much of its business, but also where private providers have long eaten away at some of the things that the post office does. We want to hear from you about what you think the future of the post office should be, what purpose it serves in your life right now. You're someone who gets a lot of mail still, snail mail, as we call it, or sends a lot of snail mail. Call and tell us why you choose that form of communication over all the other things that you have available right now. Also give us a sense of what you think the post office might do to pivot to be more vital and critical in 2022. As always, the number on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or Twitter and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. We've got two great guests with us as well. Monique Morrissey is an economist at the Economic Policy Institute, and Ian Lee is associate professor of the Sprott School of Business at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. Ian, I want to come back to you because you got cut off while we were talking before and let you finish the really great point you were making.
Yeah, when you look at the actual numbers, and this is what I testify, I've written two op-eds in the national newspaper, the Globe and Mail, sort of analogous to the New York Times in Canada, and saying that the post office is at a crisis point, and so is the USPS. And that is because if you look at the people who write letters, they're overwhelmingly at the high end of the demographic scale. They're older people. There's no question about the data. Young people, overwhelmingly, as we all know, live in the digital world with their cell phones. I see it with my students every day. And this is not to say that there's no need for the post office. That's not my argument. My argument is the post office has got to be reinvented. So I'm actually saying something quite similar to Monique. I disagree about postal banking just simply because I don't buy the argument that there's a shortage of bank accounts or banking institutions in either country. When you look at the number of people that have bank accounts, it's 96% in the States. It's 99% in Canada. So, but that doesn't mean that there aren't all kinds of things, that, you know, driver's licenses, hunting licenses, fishing licenses, government checks, a government resource center for all things government, for the interface, for the face-to-face. Instead of every government department having its own department, you use the post office as the community hub. And again, in the big cities, and this is really important, I think the post office has become largely irrelevant in the big cities, in the major cities, you know, say over 150 or 100,000. But when you go to the rural, and you go to the small towns and villages across Canada, across the U.S., and I go to the States every year, four and five times, it's amazing how important the post office is. It's the center of the town's existence. And so you may need a dual strategy where it's maintained and reinvested in smaller towns, communities, and whereas in the larger cities, the need for it is diminishing by the minute. One more very quick point. Canada Post has decided to reinvent itself as the essential partner of e-commerce. and their e-commerce parcel delivery is exploding. And by the way, the data for the U.S. postal system is also exploding. So they've got to focus like a laser beam on becoming the critical partner of all the e-commerce companies, whether it's Amazon or Walmart or whatever, because the postal system has one singular overwhelming competitive advantage in the U.S., 31,000 postal outlets. As Monique just said, nobody else has anything close to that. Not Walmart, nobody. And that is one enormous, incredible distribution network. That's their competitive advantage. They've got to leverage it and generate more revenue per post office by doing many other things.
313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Call and join this really great conversation about the Postal Service, what it's like right now, what it could be like, what it might be like, given the legislation that President Joe Biden signed yesterday. You can also go to social media, of course, and leave comments there. I want to start with a couple of social media comments. Big Neo on Twitter says, as a USPS worker, it's a relief to hear about these changes coming into play. Now, if Congress can ensure to place management that has come up through the Postal Service and not use folks like DeJoy, who is running the Postal Service right now, who have zero work experience with the post office, we'd be better off. I'm going to come back to that point in a little bit. Matt on Twitter says, curious to know if the dismantling of sorting equipment ordered to slow the delivery of absentee ballots in swing states like Michigan and causing a slowdown in mail delivery that harms small businesses, has that been remedied? I want to come back to both of those points, but I want to get to some calls first. Daniel in Detroit, you're up first.
Well, I just wanted to make the point that, you know, why are we hand delivering mail to the majority of doors in America? You know, my neighborhood's got mailboxes at the end of the street, and it's not an inconvenience. I mean, that could save a lot of time and a lot of money. Also, why are we delivering 5 or 6 days a week, and mainly we're delivering junk mail? What is the carbon footprint of junk mail, and what is the carbon footprint of 5 to 6 days a week of hand delivering to everybody's house? Why don't we move this? Let's stagger it. Let's do one neighborhood on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Let's do another neighborhood on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. Let's not buy all these vehicles right now. If we change this right now, we could probably buy 30% electric vehicles for the Postal Service.
Yeah,
we
Daniel. Daniel, that's a really interesting set of ideas, and I'm glad you called and made those suggestions. I think especially the question of why we deliver to people's doors as opposed to some common receptacle, I guess, which is how we send mail, as you point out, right? You put the mail in the box at the end of the block. Monique
Ian,
Morrissey, I'll give you the first.
Can I jump in on this?
Yeah,
one?
No, go ahead, Ian. Yeah.
And the reason why, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude or anything, but Canada literally addressed this exact question. Oh. And we went to they're called community mailboxes. So at the end of every street, there's a box with the logo of the postal system, et cetera. And the postal person, the letter carrier, delivers the mail to that box, and there's little boxes with keys, almost like safety deposit boxes. And the cost, and this was verified by Deloitte Consulting, the cost, the savings for that the so-called last mile problem is staggering. It's $500 per person per year. They're saving billions by going to community mailboxes, and about 75% of the country, of the population, has been converted to community mailboxes. So the savings are very, very significant. It's much more efficient. And secondly, to the point of staggered delivery, I testified again before the Investigatory Commission on the Future of the Canadian Post Office, and I said, look, because the mail volumes are dropping, we don't need it 5 or 6 days a week. We need it, yes. But I said every second day, and there's been public opinion polls surveying both businesses and consumers separately, and there's a majority support for reduced delivery, not eliminating, but say Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, so long as they know that they're still going to have their mail service.
Monique Morrissey, I wonder what you make of Daniel's suggestions for more competitiveness.
Well, first of all, I'm actually half Canadian, and so I'm very familiar with the clustered mailboxes. And this issue does come up in the United States. The United States is much more densely populated than Canada, and so the cost savings would be a lot less. Also, the we were talking earlier about there's a suggestion by Ian that that it should be that the Postal Service should shift towards just servicing rural elderly people versus urban young people. And I think that's all wrong for economic reasons, which is that, that would basically burden the Postal Service with doing only the most expensive deliveries and then, allow the, private sector to cherry pick the most lucrative routes. So I strongly disagree with that. But also in the United States, they have periodically considered not the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but dropping Saturday service. And what they invariably find out is that it is the 6 day a week service that is the most valuable thing that the Postal Service provides. That and one of the things that, that the current postmaster is, he's undercutting this, not so much by suggesting that they drop Saturday delivery, but by talking about slower delivery for far-flung areas. And so this is extremely controversial because you can always on paper say you're saving costs by cutting services, but when you cut service, people also shift their business to other carriers or other things. And so you lose business. And as to the general idea that the Postal Service is something of the past because people are paying their bills or they're emailing each other rather than, the postal vehicles that they're buying are, they actually carry more rather than less because we are shifting from predominantly mail to a lot of packages. So we're modernizing. There's always been trends. There's always been ebbs and flows in the different kinds of things that are shipped by the Postal Service. It's not a question of losing business or becoming archaic. It's a question of we're moving towards moving medicines, moving, ballots and things like that, other critical things. The Postal Service is more necessary, not necessary, than ever.
Yeah. Stephen, just one quick point. Sure. I agree with Monique, but let's remember, the business model of traditional letter delivery is you push out the mail and go to every address 5 or 6 days a week, whether you have mail to take there or not. The parcel post business model, if I can call it that, is very different. You only take the parcel to the address when you have a parcel to take to the address. So it's a fundamentally different business model. Yes, that model is, the parcels are growing like crazy. The percentage increases for the USPS is phenomenal. And I think it is the future. I agree with Monique, but it's a different business model when letter mail disappears, and I think it's going to be gone within about 10 years once the older generation pass on, and it's going to shrivel away to an insignificant number. But parcels are exploding, but you don't walk down to 160 million addresses in the U.S. five, 6 days a week if you don't have a parcel to take to them. It's a different business model.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to get the answers to the social media questions that we had about leadership and this dismantling of equipment. We've only got about a minute left, though. Monique, do you want to take a stab at both of those?
There was actually among the things that happened, it was a very eventful week for the Postal Service. And one of the things they had was a hearing on two nominees to the Postal Board. Long story short, they're slowly replacing the Trump appointees who hired Louis DeJoy, who technically works at the pleasure of the board. So Biden is slowly replacing the board has to be split fairly evenly between Republicans and Democrats. Right now, there will be 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and 1 independent when the year is out. But there will be fewer that were Democrats appointed by Trump who are strong supporters of the current very controversial Postmaster General. So that is what advocates are looking to, who want Postmaster General DeJoy to leave, are hoping that these new nominees will move in that direction.
Yeah. Okay. I would love to continue this conversation, and the listeners would too. The phone lines are crowded and social media is kind of overflowing, but we are out of time. Ian Lee and Monique Morrissey, though, I want to thank both of you for being here with us. This was a really great conversation.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. That's going to do it for us today. Tune in tomorrow when we are going to talk with Imani Perry about her really interesting new book, South to America, A Journey Below the Mason-Dixon to Understand the Soul of a Nation. You are not going to want to miss that conversation. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.